Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is March 9, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments in fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about asset ratings giant Morningstar takes first plunge into blockchain securities. Bitcoin falls to two-month low below $8,000 amid global market rout. China injects $4.7 million into central bank's blockchain trade finance platform. Legacy Trust's crypto spinoff receives $3 million to roll out Asian settlement platform. T0 affiliated firm hopes SEC will pass updated proposal for security token platform. Paradigm leads $12 million round for DeFi-friendly wallet startup. Bitcoin, bonds and gold, why markets are upended in a time of fear. The gig economy is unfair. Here's how token models can help. Exiled Bitmain co-founder is fighting back with second lawsuit. Bitcoin's sharp price drop may have been prompted by $120 million scam sell-off. Now let's get started. Asset ratings giant Morningstar takes first plunge into blockchain securities. Another day, another blockchain first. As part of a $39.7 million investment in Fat Brands, the owner of fast casual eatery chain Fatburger, DBRS Morningstar has for the first time rated securities issued on a blockchain. Ethereum, to be precise. As reported by Forbes on Sunday, the Toronto-headquartered ratings firm, which says it rates investment assets from over 2,600 issuers worldwide, actually rated a traditional debt security backed by franchise royalties and upfront fees coming in via Fat Brands companies, which also include Buffalo's and Ponderosa Steakhouse. However, the security was structured to include several Ethereum tokens in the investment process. With help from New York-based structuring consultant Cadence, ERC-20 tokens digitally representing the debt security were issued Friday to all investors' wallets, with transactions logged on the Ethereum blockchain. Quarterly payments will follow in the same way, according to Forbes. Morningstar reportedly said in its rating that using Ethereum would speed up access to data on the securities, as well as boost transparency. For the blockchain side of the investment process, $40 million in dollar CDG, a stablecoin linked to the US dollar, was held by the trustee, UMB Bank, while Fat Brands held other tokens representing two tranches of the debt security. A smart contract completed the settlement of the trade, passing security tokens to the investors and dollar CDGs to Fat in transactions visible on blockchain explorers. It's definitely the first rated securitization with a digital asset element, and we're using it the way it was intended, to provide that level of transparency, Nelson Chu, founder and CEO of Cadence, told Forbes. Cadence has previously issued over 60 blockchain securities on Ethereum, though none were rated. Bitcoin falls to two-month low below $8,000 amid global market rout. Update, March 9, 1530 Coordinated Universal Time. After the publication of this story, Bitcoin fell further, hitting two-month lows below $7,700. Dumping by a Ponzi scheme played a mighty role in the sell-off, market sources said. Read more here. The price of Bitcoin has fallen to a one-month low below $7,900, amid a wider sell-off in the global financial markets. As of writing, the price of the world's largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization is changing hands at $7,837, the lowest in the past 30 days and a 10% decline on a 24-hour basis, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. The price decline comes as the global financial markets suffer a wider sell-off, with Brent crude oil dropping over 30% on Sunday, its biggest single-day decline since 1991. Underscoring the severity of the global flight from assets perceived as risky is the drop in the 10-year U.S. Treasury yield below 0.5% for the first time ever, down over 2 percentage points from a year ago. Bitcoin's sudden price dip also comes as the network's computing power and mining difficulty, a measure of competition among miners, are both expected to reach a new high in just 5 hours. With more processing power chasing a less valuable asset, mining farms that are using old mining equipment are in for an even tougher time. Data from the mining pool Poulin shows the most widely used mining computers such as the Antminer S9 and Avalon 851 are all at a critical break-even point, meaning they are not generating any daily profits at Bitcoin's current price, amid all-time high mining difficulty. China injects $4.7 million into central bank's blockchain trade finance platform. The Chinese government has earmarked additional funding for a blockchain-based trade finance platform developed and led by the country's central bank. The People's Bank of China, PBOC, is to receive 32.35 million yuan, around $4.7 million, in special funding from the government over a 3-year period for research and development into the trade initiative, officials confirmed to local media. Known officially as the Bay Area Trade Finance Blockchain Platform, banks and businesses store order, logistics and transaction data on the system to create new transaction efficiencies. It's also said to provide regulators with greater oversight and gives small and medium-sized enterprises (SMEs) access to more sophisticated financing tools. Led by PBOC's Digital Currency Research Lab, the trade finance platform is available to businesses based in Shenzhen, a mainland city neighboring Hong Kong. Major commercial banks, including Bank of China, Ping An and Standard Chartered, were invited to trial the platform when it entered the public testing phase in September 2018. In January, Xinhua reported the platform was used by a network of 38 banks with total combined volumes exceeding 90 billion yuan, $13 billion. The new funding from Beijing is expected to help PBOC drive adoption for its trade finance platform among businesses. A report from McKinsey said the platform could create significant new opportunities for banks, SMEs and service providers. As well as lower interest rates, analysts estimated loan approval times could fall to as little as 20 minutes. Chinese President Xi Jinping said last autumn the country had to seize the opportunity when it came to blockchain technology, including increasing government investment and development in core technology areas. Legacy Trust's crypto spin-off receives $3 million to roll out Asian settlement platform. An Asian digital assets custodian, which is building a crypto settlement layer to offer a local alternative to Silvergate Bank, has announced a new lead investor ahead of its coming launch. Hong Kong-based First Digital Trust, FDT, announced Monday it had received a $3 million investment from Taiwanese venture studio firm Nogal. The funding will support FDT's offering, including the Rapid Settlement and Clearing Network, RSCN, an institutional-orientated trading platform for the Asia region to launch in May. A lot of the funding will be deployed to building out the First Digital Trust tech stack, First Digital Chief Operating Officer Gunnar Jayarv said in a statement to CoinDesk. We are also deploying capital into compliance building for financial services that not only meet our global clientele requirements but also worldwide regulatory standards. FDT started out as the digital asset subsidiary for Legacy Trust, a major Asian trust and custody company, but was spun out in September 2018. When it unveiled plans for the RSCN in February, FDT said its settlement layer would provide an alternative regional solution to the Silvergate Exchange Network, SEN, which forces crypto firms to make settlements under tough U.S. regulations by virtue of Silvergate Bank's stateside location. RSCN would also support local currencies alongside the U.S. dollar, according to Jayarv. Established in 2014, Nogal has supported projects it believes will help develop the future digital payment landscape. Its portfolio includes payment gateways, digital ID providers, and a proprietary cryptocurrency exchange, BTSE. Nogal founder Jonathan Leong told CoinDesk the company saw the value in First Digital as both a custodian solution and institutional settlement layer. Beyond just funding, Leong said Nogal will assist in tech development and third-party collaborations. Based on their current platform, we're looking to build up their settlement layer and put up more formal partnerships, Leong said. Basically to have more businesses plug into the settlement layer. Nogal also invested $2.5 million in the first round of Telegram's, now troubled, initial coin offering, which raised a total of $850 million in January 2018. T0 affiliated firm hopes SEC will pass updated proposal for security token platform. Boston Options Exchange (BOX) is trying again to calm regulatory concerns about Ethereum's role in storing ownership records as it seeks permission to launch a security token platform. To that end, the firm has filed an amended proposal with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission (SEC), dated February 28, which was published in the Federal Register on Friday. That opens the proposal up to feedback from interested members of the public. BOX wants the SEC to sign off on its new subsidiary, the Boston Security Token Exchange, BSTX, a trading platform for tokenized equity that will also store ownership data on the Ethereum blockchain. The amended filing, with notable tweaks from the version submitted by BOX in December, increases the number of market makers required for an initial listing from 2 to 3, and makes listing standards closer to those set by the New York Stock Exchange, NYSE. The exchange also took pains to stress once more that BSTX records held on Ethereum would only be ancillary records that would not create or convey any ownership of security tokens or shareholder equity. In other words, Ethereum won't be used as a substitute for conventional ownership records anytime soon. BSTX is a joint venture announced by BOX and T0, the company that hosted one of the first proper security token offerings, STOs, back in 2018. BOX filed its first version of a rulebook for the first regulated security token exchange in May 2019, which the SEC published for public consultation in October the same year. Judging by the summing up section, BOX looks to be trying to allay any possible concerns from the SEC so it can make the important first step in integrating blockchain into the U.S. financial system. Success might mean that other entities, including traditional finance institutions, could also begin experimenting with the technology, the filing suggests. A BOX spokesperson said the firm was not able to comment at this stage of the process. Although blockchain technology enables round-the-clock permissionless trading, BOX has also reiterated that, in keeping with U.S. financial regulation, BSTX would only be open during U.S. market hours and users would need to be approved first before they can begin trading on the exchange. Paradigm leads $12 million round for DeFi-friendly wallet startup. It's about to be easier than ever to take risky bets using Ethereum-based financial products, thanks to the crypto wallet startup Argent. Paradigm, spearheaded by Coinbase co-founder Fred Ersom, just led Argent's $12 million Series A, along with Compound founder Robert Leshner and Index Ventures. The London-based wallet startup has now raised $16 million since it was founded in December 2017. I don't know what the revenue model will be, but we know it's going to attract a lot of users. Leshner said of Argent. They are creating one of the smoothest on-ramps to DeFi, decentralized finance products. Leshner said he was attracted to the investment opportunity because the startup offers a unique combination of smart contract architecture and a convenient user experience. Plus, the crypto wallet has social recovery features so users can get their accounts back if they lose phones. Argent Chief Executive Itamar Lasuisse said there are more than 3,000 active user accounts already during the six-month closed beta, and more than 1,000 people on the waiting list for the public launch in April. He said so far more than half of them use DeFi products, like loans and interest-bearing deposits. DeFi was the reason to come to Argent, Lasuisse described the user feedback as being. Users can now take out a crypto-backed loan, for example, with just a few clicks of a button. These DeFi products involve technical risks, he added, related to bugs inside the smart contracts. But he said the DeFi companies, not the wallet itself, are the ones responsible for disclosures related to specific products. One such provider, the Maker Foundation, said in a press statement it's very supportive of Argent's work to make it more easy, more secure and more convenient for more people to participate in DeFi. Paradigm partner Matt Huang said his firm was attracted to Argent because it strikes a nice balance between security and usability. DeFi risks. Le Suisse said his 17-person startup's mobile wallet is as simple as Venmo, and will expand its DeFi product options this year. The mobile wallet is indeed designed for simplicity. It allows users to purchase crypto with their debit cards or Apple Pay accounts, through partnerships with Wire and MoonPay. Yet, critics like blockchain consultant Udi Wertheimer say once funds from the wallet are plugged into the DeFi ecosystem, then Maker or Compound manage funds and the funds can be taken away from users at any point. This wallet has a unique identifier associated with the phone and a backup recovery method set up with either Argent or the user's friend or relative, which is unique compared to similar mobile wallets with private keys. However, the DeFi loans and contracts taken with the wallet are still arguably under the realm of various providers such as Compound. Last month, the DeFi project BZX, which isn't accessible through Argent, was hacked through a smart contract vulnerability that led to a loss of just under $1 million. Although we make the experience simple, these are still complex financial products, Le Suisse said of DeFi. Argent is not currently focused on monetization. Instead, it receives some small fees from DeFi providers like the Kyber Exchange. So far, Le Suisse said, the average user has roughly $2,000 in their Argent wallet. It's an easy way for consumers to interact with DeFi. Argent can't prevent some of the risks that might occur in the DeFi space overall, Huang said, acknowledging the risks associated with smart contract bugs. As a user, you're still exposed to and should be comfortable with the actions you take. Bitcoin, bonds and gold, why markets are upended in a time of fear. Noel Acheson is a veteran of company analysis and CoinDesk's director of research. The opinions expressed in this article are the author's own. The following article originally appeared in Institutional Crypto by CoinDesk, a weekly newsletter focused on institutional investment in crypto assets. Sign up for free here. Anyone seen the movie Parasite? You know, the one about class mobility, creative solutions and scary basements. I thought of that film after reading Jill Carlson's op-ed a couple of days ago. She looks at our collective surprise that Bitcoin is not a safe haven, and in a gentle way asks, well, what did you expect? She highlights that Bitcoin, BTC, is too young to be considered a safe haven because its narrative is not yet formed. That doesn't mean it won't eventually get there, though. What does this have to do with a South Korean Oscar winner? Well, in Parasite we spend the first hour thinking the film is about one thing but it turns out it's not, it's about something totally different. The same thing is happening in Cryptoland. Jill's right, Bitcoin's narrative is the key driver of its price trends, and it will change over time. The story isn't about what Bitcoin is but about what it will be. An even more interesting narrative shift, however, is unfolding elsewhere. I am talking about the rest of the market. Almost all of it, in fact. Narratives are shifting all over the place. For instance, everyone knows you should have bonds in your portfolio because they offer income and stability. I mean, there's no way rates could go negative, right? This week the yield on 30-year and 10-year U.S. government debt dropped to their lowest levels ever. The S&P 500 now yields more than treasuries, calling into question the entire concept of risk distribution. Even gold is behaving strangely. We hold it up as the ultimate example of a safe haven investment, and yet market structure shifts are calling that into question. Last week the gold price dropped almost 5% in one day, the largest daily fall in 7 years, due to deleveraging pressure from derivative positions. And we tend to forget that gold fell almost 30% at the height of the 2008 market rout. Gold's role as a safe haven is entirely based on narratives, that shiny and yellow are desirable qualities, surely that's subjective, that supply is limited, we don't know that for sure, and that heavy is good. You'll have heard the derogatory expression such a lightweight. These days, heavy is in very difficult to pick up and take with you is perhaps not the indicator of utility it once was. Even though we can all agree gold's metallic properties are impressive, its position as the world's safe haven is no longer universally unassailable, and through no fault of its own. The narratives around it are changing, and the resumption of the gold price rally at the beginning of the week seems less based on conviction the metal will hold its value in times of trouble and more of a desperate realization there's nothing out there that can yet take its place. Now, why so many narrative shifts all of a sudden? Actually, narratives are always changing, but the pace of change is usually much slower than what we are witnessing today. What we are witnessing is a breakdown of assumptions, in a time of fear. We're worried about the economy, the banking system, the climate, living conditions, politics, education, and the automatization of jobs. Add to that a growing feeling of vulnerability and concern about health and contagion. In times of fear, we fall back on what we know, what we can be sure of. These days, that's not much. In his poignant 1944 paper called The Social Psychology of Fear, philosopher Kurt Riesler pointed out that if we do not know the nature of a danger, we make an assumption. Without such an assumption, we cannot act. But what are assumptions if not conclusions based on narratives? We assumed interest rates would never go negative. We assumed house prices would never go down. We assumed profits were a good thing, and social media would liberate us. So now, confronted by many dangers we are still struggling to understand, we are reaching for assumptions we no longer trust. Bitcoin's narrative is changing, as is to be expected for such a young and complex innovation. But so are the narratives that guide just about every other aspect of investing. A few years from now, when the new narratives have settled into some semblance of normality, we'll look back on this time and realize that the bigger story was in front of us all along. The gig economy is unfair. Here's how token models can help. Guy's Huff is managing partner at Coinstone Capital, an Amsterdam-based digital asset investment fund focused on tokenization. Guy's is also a partner at Digital Asset Consulting, DIAC, a consulting firm specialized in asset tokenization. Imagine a web-based taxi company where the drivers are the co-owners, a company that automatically distributes its increasing profits to its drivers. Or imagine a delivery platform that pays its couriers higher wages as it gets more popular. Unfortunately, the driving forces behind the growing gig economy, companies such as Uber and DoorDash, do exactly the opposite. The growth of the gig economy is a huge concern for governments and policymakers worldwide. Technological innovation is a crucial part of every modern economy, but the companies that have created the gig economy consistently exploit the rights of their workers and users. The examples are numerous: Uber drivers having to work 60 hours a week to earn the minimum wage, startups not contributing to retirement. The list goes on. Blockchain-based CoOps can help governments create an economy of inclusion and rewrite the social contract for the 21st century. There is a solution to this problem, and it does not lie in stricter regulation. Traditional regulatory approaches for old-fashioned companies don't work well for borderless digital platforms. It lies in creating a regulatory framework for a viable alternative, digital cooperatives. Co-ops are usually associated with agriculture or banks, but the digital platforms of the internet economy, social networks, takeaway delivery, holiday rentals, and taxi platforms actually are the embodiment of cooperative work. The cooperative efforts of the contributors and customers of these platforms create the real value. The platforms themselves only coordinate the efforts. The technology that would enable the creation of digital cooperatives is blockchain. Bitcoin, BTC, the digital currency, has become the most prominent example of blockchain technology. But there are many more uses for it. The keyword is tokenization. Tokenization is the creation of a new digital currency or tokens that serves as the exclusive payment mechanism for these digital cooperatives. Let's take the example of Uber. This web platform has been establishing footholds in many countries by initially subsidizing taxi rides. These cheap rides create demand from passengers, which leads to drivers joining. But as more drivers join, competition increases. Uber can then force its drivers to accept less pay and increase its margins. The beneficiaries of this race to the bottom are Uber's investors and shareholders. If Uber, or a company like it, was a tokenized digital cooperative, then the dynamics would change dramatically. The drivers of this cooperative taxi platform would be paid in its own currency, which would easily be exchanged for dollars or euros. Because a limited total amount of these tokens would be created, their value will increase as the popularity of the service grows. This would attract more drivers, which will lead to more customers and another increase in demand and value for the tokens. This digital cooperative model has a lot of benefits for other sectors of the digital economy as well. Think of a social network, like Facebook, but one that pays its users for selling their data to advertisers. A network of users are also members and have a say in the governance of it. Tokenized digital cooperatives will help people cooperate because everybody involved will benefit. Pooling resources, sharing equipment, or new kinds of pension and insurance schemes are a possibility as well. All transactions will be entered into a blockchain and can, therefore, be verified. Blockchain-based co-ops can help governments create an economy of inclusion and rewrite the social contract for the 21st century. A clear regulatory framework is needed for this to happen. The way these digital co-ops and their tokens can be created needs to be enshrined in law. Expanding current cooperative law by including digital co-ops and the creation of tokens, plus tokenized owner and membership, could be a good way forward. Regulators have been wary of the dark sides of Bitcoin, which has slowed innovation in token-based business models. A clear legal status for digital co-ops would allow cutting-edge technology to use market mechanisms to solve one of the bigger issues of our times, the shift to a digital economy that harms many workers. Tokenized digital cooperatives also provide the possibility for investors to support startups with capital in exchange for a certain number of the tokens created. This way, they will become part of the inclusive economy and no longer need to gain wealth on the backs of customers or workers. Exiled Bitmain co-founder is fighting back with second lawsuit. Mikrae Katuwin-Zahn, the ousted co-founder of Bitmain, has filed another lawsuit in his fight to regain control of the Bitcoin mining giant, this time in his home country. A recent notice from the Changla District Court in China's Fujian province indicates Zahn has filed a lawsuit against Bitmain's fully owned subsidiary Fujian Zhanhua Intelligence Technologies, as well as Beijing Bitmain Technologies as a related third party. A hearing of the case was scheduled on February 11, according to the notice, although it's likely postponed due to the disruption caused by the coronavirus outbreak. While it's not clear what the exact allegations are, the court says the case relates to a shareholder qualification confirmation dispute. The case adds to the ongoing litigation in the Cayman Islands Zahn has filed against the company he co-founded with Jihan Wu in 2013, casting further uncertainty on the outcome of the power struggle at the world's largest miner maker as well as its planned initial public offering in the U.S. Zahn filed a lawsuit in December in the Caymans, where Bitmain's parent holding entity is registered, asking a court to void a decision allegedly passed at a shareholder meeting that significantly curtailed his voting power. Lawyers representing Zahn in the Cayman Islands previously told CoinDesk that Zahn, as a major shareholder, was not aware of the meeting beforehand, and a hearing for the case might be scheduled after the Easter holiday. Asset protection. The lawsuit in China also followed an asset protection petition filed by Zahn and approved by the same court in December, but the court's full judgment was not made public until last Thursday. The court sided with Zahn to freeze 36% of Fujian Zhanhua's 10 million yuan incorporated shares owned by Bitmain, worth 3.6 million yuan, or $500,000, though the value of the frozen assets may be negligible for Bitmain, the percentage could be significant. Fujian Zhanhua is 100% owned by Beijing Bitmain, whose parent company is Cayman-registered Bitmain Technologies Holding, of which Zahn remains the largest shareholder with 36%. That means Zan indirectly owns 36% of Fujian Zhanhua, suggesting the asset protection move is intended to prevent his power over this subsidiary from being transferred or diluted. Under the court's asset protection order, Beijing Bitmain will not be able to transfer or pledge these frozen assets as collateral, nor would it be able to increase the subsidiary's total incorporated capital in order to dilute the percentage of the frozen ownership. But why Fujian Zhanhua? It may appear surprising that Zan would file a case against one subsidiary out of a dozen entities under Bitmain's holding firm, and in a court in Fujian instead of Bitmain's home base in Beijing. But the importance of Fujian Zhanhua could hint at Zan's strategy for fighting back since he was ousted in a coup in November 2019. To be sure, Zan, a Fujian native, is still the legal representative of Fujian Zhanhua, a firm that was ranked 58th by the Fujian provincial government in 2018 out of the top 100 taxpayer companies. And Bitmain's Hong Kong IPO filing in 2018 listed Fujian Zhanhua as one of the four principal subordinate entities that had made material contribution to the financial results of Bitmain's holding group, alongside Beijing Bitmain, Bitmain Hong Kong and a Shenzhen manufacturing subsidiary. The document specified the principal business activity of Fujian Zhanhua as Bitmain's sales center for cryptocurrency mining hardware in China. Bitmain booked over $2.5 billion in revenue in 2017 alone, of which about 95% came from sales of its mining hardware. And the mainland China market counted for nearly 50% of the total sales volume that year. In fact, Bitmain's two major sales channels, the Antminer pre-sales and post-sales WeChat accounts, were previously owned and operated by Fujian Zhanhua. However, the ownership for both channels was migrated to another, lesser-known Bitmain subsidiary in December, whose legal representative is not Zan. Further, the IPO document revealed the Fujian subsidiary played a vital role in one of Bitmain's financing activities in 2018. In July 2018, Beijing Bitmain signed a series of purchase agreements worth $100 million to buy an office building in Beijing. To finance that transaction, it borrowed $49 million from a local bank with the acquired property pledged as collateral and with Fujian Zhanhua as a guarantor, underscoring the financial wherewithal of the Fujian subsidiary. Bitcoin's sharp price drop may have been prompted by $120 million scam sell-off. Bitcoin has plunged to two-month lows since Sunday, possibly due to an over $100 million liquidation by Plus Token scammers, analysts say. The top cryptocurrency fell by nearly 10% from $8,900 to $8,000 on Sunday to register its single biggest daily decline since September 2019, according to Bitstamp data. Then on Monday, Bitcoin, BTC, slipped further to two-month lows below $7,700 during the Asian trading hours. At press time, the cryptocurrency's global average price, as calculated by CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index, has recovered somewhat to $7,925. While the sudden price drop has taken place alongside a bloody day in the traditional markets, there may be another factor driving down Bitcoin's value so severely. The sudden drop in prices seems to arise out of the selling of BTC by Plus Token. Ashish Singhal, CEO of the cryptocurrency exchange Coinswitch.co, told CoinDesk. On Saturday, scammers in control of the remaining wallets of the China-based Ponzi scheme moved 13,000 BTC, worth around $101 million currently, but close to $120 million at the time, to so-called mixers and may have offloaded their holdings, causing prices to fall sharply, according to Singhal. Mixers are used to obfuscate the source of a crypto transaction by outputting batches with different coins than are sent in. Plus Token had posed as a cryptocurrency wallet and swindled investors out of possibly as much as $2 billion in cryptocurrency by promising rewards. While six of its masterminds were arrested in June 2019, the authorities could not seize 180,000 BTC, 6,400,000 Ether, ETH, and 111,000 Tether, USDT, which were sent from scam victims to Plus Token wallets, according to Chainalysis. Trader Kevin Svensson has also associated the latest price drop with Plus Token holdings being dumped into the market. People in control of the Plus token wallets have been liquidating their stolen bitcoins since August and likely played a big role in pushing Bitcoin down from $12,000 to $6,500 in the 4 months to November. As noted by Ergo Research at the time. Back in December, the scammers still controlled 20,000 bitcoins, of which 13,000 looked to have been moved for liquidation over the weekend. Macros or scam? Some, of course, may argue that moving coins to mixers does not necessarily result in liquidation, and the sell-off seen from Sunday was caused by the coronavirus-led crash in the global financial markets. Indeed, negative global macro factors such as the equity market sell-off and record low in the U.S. government bond yield may have also played a role in pushing Bitcoin lower, as noted by popular analyst Jacob Canfield. Still, a major Plus token liquidation could well have weighed heavy over Bitcoin's price if it did occur. The cryptocurrency was trading steadily above $9,000 on Saturday as the scammed coins were being moved to mixers and fell sharply the following day. Further, traditional markets were closed over the weekend. Canfield too listed a Plus token dump as one of the factors possibly responsible for Bitcoin's price drop. Chart view. So how did Bitcoin's price drop look from a technical perspective? Bitcoin needed higher prices on the 4-hour chart to get itself into a neutral stance between $9,200 to $9,600, popular Twitter analyst Mr. Anderson told CoinDesk. Once that battle was lost, it left the 12-hour chart in an ugly position as well, and things snowballed quickly, Anderson said. In the aftermath, the head and shoulders breakdown, a bearish reversal pattern, seen on the daily chart suggests the rally from December lows near $6,400 has ended and the bears have regained control. The bias will remain bearish as long as prices are holding below the former support turned resistance of the neckline, currently placed at $8,450. A bullish reversal now requires a convincing UTC close above the March 7 high of $9,213. That would invalidate the lower highs setup. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.